You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest of a podcast this week is João Marques, CEO of Oscar.
Just having one goal, like my focus, for example, is right now is acquisition and GMV, so volume in my app. So I'm refreshing the dashboard every 10 minutes. Every decision that we make is based on that. Every goal is based on that. Everyone in my team, and we are like 50 people from customer support to senior management, everyone knows GMV on a daily basis.
This is João. We dig into how he ignored every growth playbook to build Portugal's market leader in just 2 years. You'll hear how choosing controversy over convention created a brand people actually remember, and what happened when he expanded 3 cities per week instead of 3 per year. The conversation reveals impatience as strategy, and what happens when you build a company that matches your personality instead of fighting it. Well, hi, João. Thank you for making the time available today and being my guest on my podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Exactly. I got introduced to you by my friend MG from Kuvama, and he was high up about you. He said, you have João on the podcast. So here we are. So I was looking forward to this, especially also when I did my research on what you've been building since 2019 and the progress and the growth that you've been seeing so far and the ambition that you also have behind it. There's a lot to take away from this. So let's get going. Before we start talking about the company that you started, what drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
Well, I think it's really like to create new things, to kind of challenge the way that things are being done so far. Like for me, like when I started using apps like ride-hailing, grocery delivery, food delivery, it completely changed my, I know it's a small thing, but it completely changed my way of living, I would say, you know, because I've been working long hours since I started working, and all of those apps been part of my life since then. And I think like if everyone contributed like in that magnitude, if every one of us built something like change something like the way that I order food, like small things on our day to day, the way that I book an hotel, you know, on Airbnb or something like that. If everyone made like a small contribution, it's not small, but if everyone made a contribution like that, I think we would like evolve as human beings way, way faster. So yeah, I'm really keen to like build value, which is extremely difficult in 2025 because almost everything has been created by now, right? At least we think. Yeah,
everything has been created. Everything that, of course, there's new opportunities coming, but also with the tools available these days, with the power of data, AI.
Yeah.
It's also like speeding up. And the half-life of product is decreasing. The expectations are increasing. So it's not getting easier, but it's maybe getting more fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So making the jump then, because you talked already about apps that make your life easier. From my research, you started the company in 2019 around a frustration for a home delivery service and typically the timely ones. So what was the problem that you saw that was screaming for a solution like you've created?
Yeah, so basically, I was using these food delivery apps and ride-hailing almost on a daily basis. And I had a problem at my home. It was the first time that I moved to live like with my girlfriend. So we rented this apartment in Lisbon. And we had a problem with our water heater. It sounds like almost a made-up story, but it's really true. And I just searched on Google, like I wanted kind of an Uber for home services. I wanted to push a button and to get a plumber in like 30 minutes or for the same day with a fixed price and everything. And I couldn't find anything. So all I found at the time was really like open marketplaces that connect me with the professional. Like I had to do everything. I had to manage everything by myself, like almost like choosing a restaurant when you go on Google Maps, which makes sense, right? You had to compare like reviews, and you never get the price. So the price is always something that you get after you get in touch with these technicians. And for me, like this was super inefficient. Like I don't have time for this. I want to push a button, even if it's a little bit more expensive, which is not the case at Oscar. But yeah, I wanted to get my problem sorted like really, really fast, and I couldn't find anything. So I ended up going through the regular process of contacting multiple technicians, comparing quotes. And to be honest, I didn't compare them really, like, and I was not just looking for the cheapest solution. I was looking for the most convenient one. And yeah, the technician that I ended up scheduling never showed up. And I was like, for me, it was the first time that I saw someone like pre-agreeing to a price and to an appointment and not showing up at all, not picking up the phone. And I was like, okay, also these guys maybe need some help like managing their calendar, because I don't believe that they don't want to make money. It's just like they probably have another job or something. And yeah, so it was very, very obvious for me the problem. And I was at the stage of my life that I wanted to. So I was working in a startup, so I already knew a little bit of the ecosystem and how things work. And I wanted also to prove myself. Like I wanted to embrace a challenge that was all about execution. And for me, Oscar had like, you ask 10 people, do you want to get a plumber or a cleaner in 30 minutes with fixed prices, no delays, no nothing. If it doesn't go well, we give you a refund, so we control everything. And 10 out of 10 would say, yeah, where's that app? I want to use it. So I was like, okay, if this doesn't work, it's because of my execution and not because of like product market fit or something. Yeah.
I like that. I like that. And what I actually see and read between the lines of what you're talking about is you are combining concepts from various companies that we know, various services that we already have become accustomed to. I mean, you see, for example, I'm thinking of Uber. I'm hearing things like what is it, Domino pizzas, but all combined towards the normal day-to-day services that we need. I actually have just had a plumber today that came to fix my heater, and this has been a conversation for at least 3 weeks now. So he showed up.
Okay, cool. That's good.
Yeah, well, he showed up at 3 weeks 3 weeks after I'd actually needed him. So that's it proves again the point that there is something. There's a big opportunity in the market to raise the bar and make life better for everybody that's around. So you started. That was the big problem. You said, okay, hey, if no one is sorting this, I'm going to do it, which is speaking to your let's get things going mindset. Then the question is, of course, how do you start? Because this is not actually a simple problem to solve, because it, like you already said, it starts with marketplace almost, and then it starts about connecting things together, and then it's about building trust, I would say. I mean,
Yeah,
how
a
the
lot.
people that you actually get going, I mean, tell us about it. What was the first important thing that was fundamental to the success that you're seeing right now? Because you're actually expanding from Portugal, so it works.
Nowadays we operate in Portugal, in Spain, and we recently launched London. Everything has been very fast. We did a soft launch in 2020. Company was created in 2019. We launched in 2020, kind of still on a beta mode, like testing, and we officially launched only in 2021. That's when we actually started like investing. So we had a slow start, I would say. I had to learn everything in the company, so I knew nothing. I was a software engineer and not even a really, really good one. So I had to learn everything from product, ops, growth, supply, demand. We had a pretty high learning phase in the early days. But I think, first of all, like not planning too much, I think it helped me. I just quit my job. Like I had the, from the moment that I had the idea until I quit my job, I think it was like 3 months or something. and I didn't plan anything. One thing that I knew was that I need to quit my job and I need to go into desperate mode. Because if I start like building this while I'm working, I'm not going to be like 100% committed. And this was actually like one of the best tips that I got from the CEO from the company where I worked before. And he said like, look, you need to be on the line here because it's the only way that it's going to work. And that was a really, really nice decision that I make like with his advice, of course.
Yeah.
And I went home, I built the app, like 3, 4 months, I built the app, and then I tried to close like a small round of investment to start investing on acquiring customers, basically. And in the early days, of course, that you need always to build supply first. Any marketplace with supply and demand, you need to always first build the supply, and then it's all about growth. And once you have a lot of customers, supply will always come in if you sell it the right way. Yeah, I think it was like focus. Focus for me, it was the most important thing. It still is. Focus on one thing, one goal, one metric, and just, put all the energy there. And
Yeah.
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 Basically that, yeah.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, and talking about focus, it is trait number seven for a reason in my book, Remarkable Software Companies Focus on the Essence. What does focus mean to you? Because I mean, see, a lot of people say we are focused, and if you then start zooming in, they're not really.
Yeah. I just really just having one goal. Like my focus, for example, is right now is acquisition and GMV, so volume in my app. So I'm refreshing the dashboard every 10 minutes. Every decision that we make is based on that. Every goal is based on that. Everyone in my team, and we are like 50 people from customer support to senior management, everyone knows GMV on a daily basis. And we don't do B2B partnerships, for example. Like there's probably a huge potential there, but I just don't do it. Like I focus on B2C, I focus on my ICP, and that's it.
Let me make a small interruption here. Jody's made an excellent remark that sets his approach apart from typical startup thinking. He explained how all 50 employees, from customer support to senior management, track the same single metric daily. No other KPIs, no departmental goals, just one number everybody obsesses over. This isn't simplistic, it's strategic discipline. Complete organizational alignment on one metric creates the focus that builds market leaders. And this is what remarkable software companies do. They focus on the essence, they create something valuable and desirable, and then master the art of creating momentum. Do you want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
When we launched in Lisbon in the early days, we launched repair services only in one city, and we only expanded to cleaning services and to more than 10 cities in Portugal once we were like 100% sure that this works. Like you cannot order an Oscar on a website, for example, right now. And we know that this industry is based on Google search. So most people search on Google for a service provider and they land on a landing page and they make an order. We don't have that feature on our website. It's 100% mobile app. Why? Because, well, now we are moving and we are already like growing a bit, so we need to also unlock that channel. But until now, I think it's only one metric that you look at on your app. If you are putting another channel, then you have two channels to manage, two different metrics. It just complicates things. And yeah, at least like to build the foundation, I think like the focus is really, really important. And be obsessed. Like you need to be obsessed. It's never enough. Yeah.
Well, I like what you're saying here is that there's 50 people in your company right now, and everybody has the same metric on their dashboard, no matter whether they are in development, in sales, in
Yeah.
services, in customer support. Everybody understands this is the one that we need to nail. And every decision that they're taking and executing upon is connected to that. Is it also connected? Because between the lines, I also hear sort of segmentation type things, which is chapter one of my book, Acknowledge That You Cannot Please Everybody. Of course, there's also a form of focus. And it's, I mean, you deliberately decided that you were going to go focus on one city and, if, and at first also on one particular service, and make that happen before you decided to take another one there. What did you
And
learn from that?
one channel as well. I think it's very important. Like we focused on IG since the early days, and it's still like our biggest channel. And yeah, that means that you're not going to please everyone. Like, maybe like someone a little bit older is not on IG, so they will not like use your service or get to know you. Yeah, I think it's part of the journey. Like you need to have like critical mass on something and then expand to other things. Like optimize at its best, like what it's working, and then expand. Yeah, and also like I think, for example, the way that we do marketing, the way that we communicate to our customers, I think it's a bit unconventional. I'm not saying that it's better, but I think it's we like to we are very controversial. We are always on the edge of being canceled, to be honest. We either go viral or we get canceled. That means that you are not going to please a lot of people. Like we send SMSs or like WhatsApp message, you might receive one saying like almost like making fun of you, like, hey, your house is torn, your house is really dirty, it looks like a public bathroom. Some people don't like to get this, but some of them, like you that you're laughing right now, they like it, and maybe they will order because, oh, these guys are really pushing it. But we get a lot of complaints, a lot of people saying like, hey guys, this should be professional. You are treating me in the first person, which is a thing in Portugal and Spain as well. We decided since they want to be informal and to go straight to the point. And a lot of people don't like that. And that's fine. I mean, there's other apps they can order anywhere else. That's fine.
Exactly. Well, that reminds me of a completely different topic in my book, which is chapter number three, aim to be different, not just better, which is also about choices. And different is about, being more meaningfully different to the right type of audience that then I say, okay, hey, I found my place. I found my vendor, and I can get value from them that I cannot get anywhere else. And yeah, it's really taking it to the next level. I like that the word that you use there, unconventional, because unconventional is also, it means at the end that you stand for something or stand against something else, but it's also memorable, and that is what you really need, particularly in the consumer world. So I mean, how did it come about? How did you start that?
I feel that in 2025, first of all, I think everything starts with it was really hard for us to raise money in the early days. It's still very hard to raise money nowadays for a B2C marketplace. It's hard. But I knocked on every door in the early days, and believe me that I tried, and no one wanted to invest in us. And we got lucky enough to have like 70K as our first round to do something. With 70K, you cannot put all of your money on paid media or something like that. So you need to get creative. You need to do something that it's really different. And so, yeah, having a background that doesn't allow me to raise a lot of money from the start, because like being a first-time entrepreneur, solo founder with this ambition of building a unicorn in 5 or 6 years, I mean, people just don't believe it, and it's normal. I don't blame them. And I mean, a couple of months ago, even myself, I still didn't believe it. Everything happened so fast, and so and that and building a consumer brand. Either if it's like a marketplace or if you are selling a energy drink, it doesn't matter. Like B2C, it's really hard to build something from scratch because like you are fighting from customers' attention everywhere, and it's really expensive to get someone's attention to understand something about your company, about what you are selling. So I think what we realized since the early days is that the way that we communicate, the way that we do marketing, we need to be different. And probably 5 or 10 years from now will not be that different because we will have a lot to risk by then, hopefully. So we'll be a little bit more conservative, I would say. So the way that I look at this is like every place where we are doing marketing, where we are paying in exchange for advertising, it's always kind of a bidding war. So you either put if you like you can fight with money, but I didn't have that money, so we had to fight for attention, basically. So our ads are always very controversial. Everything, it's like we almost get canceled every time that we put a campaign out there. So
Really?
yeah, Yeah, really. Like we did stuff like in the Tube in London. It was like was a campaign 100% based on bad reviews, and we only put bad reviews there. And I remember like the guy from the agency. You guys really want to publish this? Yeah, we want because like if we had the budget to put like our ad everywhere in London, which is really really expensive, I would go for maybe a more moderate approach. But we need to get attention. And people started like sharing things on social media, even if they are saying bad things about you. If the percentage of people that are saying bad things about you, it's lower than the percentage of people that are saying good things, I think it works.
Good.
And yeah, so we tried to risk a bit there. Another thing, for example, when we started, like I told you, we didn't have money for paid media for a long-term strategy. So we decided to go for influence marketing. And at the time, like I met people that were doing influence marketing, and they told me like it's really expensive. Like you pay like in Portugal 3, 4K for a post, so it's really expensive. And I was like, yeah, but why not doing it for free? Like you just offer the service. Oh, don't even go there. They will not share for free because they are charging 3, 4K. We had more than like 50 really, really big influencers in Portugal sharing, not for free, but as an exchange for our service. So I think like, you know, just trying it. Of course, like I'm just talking about the good stuff. There are like 100 things that we tested that didn't work that we tried to be different. But yeah, the ones that work are the ones that really move the needle and the ones that make the difference. And I can tell you that if we didn't try that approach in the early days, we wouldn't be here right now, for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to think about how you can be different. And that, yeah, the whole thing around different at the end is about like the emotion that you touch. And of course you can cross the bar and then you go too far. But if you hit the right nerve, then yeah, it can do a lot. And too many companies are trying to stay on the safe side and they don't hit a nerve at all, which at the end is all wasted effort. One of the things that keeps coming back to me, I mean, because your service at the end is, of course, it's a consumer service, and there's many, many people around the world that need services like this. But what is the big choice that you're making not to go B2B with this? Because at the end, it could be a similar type of, well, it's a different approach, but it could even be much bigger.
I think that first of all, like you choose a path in the beginning, and I think we talked about focus. I think it's important to stick to the plan. And why did we make that choice in the early days? I think that when startups start, like it's all about the founder. Like it is like it's very tied to your personality because you don't have data to do anything, so you just go with the flow. And I'm a very impatient person. I want things for now. And that's why I was a huge consumer of on-demand services, because I want everything for now. And I'm the worst person that you can meet to do a B2B sale, because I don't have time. No, not time. I have the time, but I have the patience to go and have lunch with you and, you know, do small talk and then try to sell you. And then I can't do that. It's not on my DNA. I can learn, but I never did it properly. So yeah. And that's why if you sign up to Oscar, you'll get like 2 emails a day, 2 push notifications a day, 1 SMS per week. We are really, really annoying because I'm very impatient and I want things fast. And that's why we never went B2B. So if I had to do B2B, I need to hire someone that knows how to do B2B because I don't have
Understood.
pleasure and I don't, it's not my thing.
But you touch upon a very important thing at the end, you know, because you create technology and the product fulfills a particular need. You've tested it in the market. 10 out of 10 people said, I want to have something like that. Where is it? Then you build it. What was then the hardest nut to crack when it comes to creating the adoption? Because I mean, I realized that, I mean, somewhere I read that in 2 years' time you were the market leader in Portugal for services like this, which is really fast. So something worked.
I don't think there's a single thing. I think like we used the 70K, the first round really well in a way that was really cheap for us to acquire customers. Then we had some metrics, and then we start unlocking like real funding, and that's when things started to really, really grow. Basically that. So I think for us, it was the pivotal moment was, okay, these guys are growing. We want to back them up, having good investors since the early days that are 100% aligned with your strategy. And that helped us a lot. So yeah, It's the easy way, but I think money really helps, especially on
Yeah,
consumer
okay. So
businesses.
then, well, the money gave you reach, paid reach at the end. But of course, it also had to do with getting people across a boundary. Because one of the things you say is, okay, it's not only kind of getting access to particular service and getting it in, but it's also about 30 minutes. It's also about getting a fixed price. It's also about, so there's a whole range of convenience things that need to be checked implicitly almost to get things going. At what point did you realize, okay, now it's enough to kind of cross that bar?
I think, like, for me, a really important moment that I realized, like, okay, we can build something really huge here, was when we were able to replicate what we did in Portugal, in Spain. Because, this is a hop stack business, so this is not 100% software, right? So when you, I believe, like, looking from like the journey from other entrepreneurs, like SaaS business, it's all about, like, you can sell it everywhere in the world, most likely. And then you are talking with your customers. Like, imagine if you are selling HR software, right? And then they tell you, like, hey, I would even buy more if you had something to manage my team vacations, or to manage their stock options plan, or to, things, or like medical leaves, I don't know, things like that. So they start building like features, and they always like going back to the beginning and building, okay, do I have product market fit here? Yes. Do I need to tweak the product? Okay. Maybe more to the right, more to the left. And so you are always searching for product market fit. And that's how they expand. That's how they grow, usually. You can also like increase sales, but you from the beginning, you already unlock like most of the world, most of the countries that you have. For us, I think we were restricted. Like, we operate like in the physical world. So you need to expand like geographically. So I did hear that from, I didn't even think about this in the early days. But then I realized, like, we can get the path from the journey from other startups, like that do offline services, that, okay, this is all about like replicating in more countries, and do what we did in Portugal in more countries. And so I needed to prove that. And for me, that was the moment that I was really on the line, because we already had something to lose, because we already were quite big in Portugal. So what if we cannot replicate this in Spain? Maybe we got luck. You get a lot of imposter syndrome, right? Like, maybe now we got luck in Portugal, so it's not going to work in Spain for sure, or anywhere else in the world. So the moment that I started, I remember when I saw the first order in Madrid, I was like, well, this is going to work. Like, the guy accepted the service. He arrived in 30 minutes. This is going to work. Like, let's do it. Let's just replicate this as fast as possible.
How well, because you reach a very important point, because a lot of companies in the software as a service business, like you said, you create a code, and technically, if you build it the right way, you can deploy it instantly across the different countries. For you, the product is the software, the search mechanism, and the booking mechanism, and these kind of things. But a big part of it is also the people that are the supply side. And of course, for every city that you go into, you need to kind of, gather them and do the vetting again. And how does that work? What did you learn across the way to ensure that there is always good quality?
I think so it started very manually. Onboarding technicians in person, going, have a coffee with them, become friends, like build a relationship. That's how it started in the early days. That's the only way that you get, like, I remember the first technicians that I got, I had nothing to offer them. Like, I didn't have demand, I didn't have anything. So they were almost like, I would say that almost like co-founders, like the first technicians. They believed, like, most of them, they had this idea. Oh, what if we built an Uber for home services? But they didn't know how to build this, of course. So for me, it was like, okay, I'm the tech guy. I'm going to make this work for you, and you guys are going to be the first technician, so you're always going to have an advantage. And they still have. It's funny. Like, it still have, because the algorithms always push for people that have more experience. So for sure, they always get more orders. And there was a moment. So then we started like opening more cities. We got some scale, and we started to automate this process for an instant. And then we went back to the manual way again. And that's how it works. So for me, supply at this point, and I know that's going to be a moment in time that we need to automate it even more, But for me now, it's all about face-to-face meetings. It's all about renting. It's not a cafe anymore. Now it's a hotel conference room somewhere, and we go there, and someone from our team flies there and onboard them, and then talk with them all the questions that they have. And yeah, it's a team. We are in this room. We're gonna launch Oscar together in this city. Like, you're gonna be part of this. Okay, do you need a feature for that? We're gonna make it. You're gonna change prices? Well, we will see what we can do. Like, you know, but work together in the mission. And so when we open Spain, the plan was to open three cities in 1 year. By the end of the year, we were opening three cities in 1 week. So it was crazy. Everyone from the team was flying around.
Wow.
And those are really the heroes that, you know, that are able to go to a city alone, to a conference room with 50 technicians, and just, you know, and make it work. It's really hard. But I think that's the hard way is usually the right way. And onboarding people in person, it's a huge advantage that we see that we have compared to our competition. They don't onboard them in person, so you need to see a face. Because imagine if you are a plumber and if you are earning like 100K a year, imagine how do you explain your wife that your boss, it's not your boss, but you know, the person that is above you, or the company that it's managing your work, you never saw them. Like, you don't know them, you don't know how they look like. It doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't work. Like, no, I met this guy, João, or other person from the team. So they have this vibe. They want to create something new for this industry. I really like them. I should meet them. I don't know. Like, it's all about personal relationships. I think it's important.
Yeah, it's funny how all these things at the end make part of the puzzle. A reality, and like you say, it's becoming your mode because you're doing the hard things, and you keep doing the hard things first, and with that, you create your advantage. Fascinating. So 6 years into business right now, well, officially four, and then you launch in 2021. One aspect of business, and I realize you got funding, but and one aspect of funding these days is also that you become profitable. What has been a point where you said, okay, hey, these are the essential things we have to do to also create a sustainable business that technically could also run without funding over time?
Yeah, I think like before we really started like going and start to be more aggressive on acquisition, we had a moment where we proved that the unit economics worked. Like, okay, yeah, because average order value in this industry, it's pretty high. We charge a big commission as well. I mean, in line with other marketplaces, but because the AOV is higher, you can pay customer acquisition costs a little bit faster. So once we realized that, and I remember in the early days in Portugal, we were paying customer acquisition costs right on the first order. Right now in Portugal, we pay it like 78, 80%. So for me, it was like, okay, like if this business works and we can pay customer acquisition costs and they will still make a lot of orders after if we do a good job, there's no way why I should wait for this country to be profitable to invest in the next one. Like, you just need to believe it and you need to see the trends going down. And that's what I'm focused right now. My strategy is really to be present in almost every country in Europe and get as much market as I can as fast as possible. Time is everything here. And then I will look into profitability. And I'm not doing something different here. I'm just following the playbook from, you know, Bolt, Uber, Wolt, other companies that did exactly the same thing. Yeah, and that for me, that's the most important thing, because the biggest risk that we have is someone starting like something exactly like what we are doing that can unlock more funding than us. And I don't want to be in a, you know, food delivery war or grocery delivery war like we saw with Gorillas and Getir and companies like this, where you are
True.
almost like giving it out for free. So yeah, I think the balance between profitability right away or looking at the long run. And it also depends, like, if I'm here to build a unicorn, that's my ambition. That's what I want to live for this world, let's say. So I don't want to, like, if it's just to be profitable in two or three countries, maybe that I'm not the guy, you know, like, yeah. But of course, like, being super conscious always on unit economics, customer break even, but not like company break even, I would say. because there's no, even in Portugal, like we had moments where we were profitable in Portugal for a couple of months. The moment that I saw that we were profitable in Portugal, like, okay, let's invest again, because there's still a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, you make a valid point, by the way, about these wars that are going on, particularly in the food delivery world. How do you prevent that from happening to your niche or your segment of the market?
I think if you get the supply, if the supply is engaged, if they love the app that they work with, I think that's more valuable than paying more, 1 or 2 euros more, like that the competitor can pay. So I think there's that. And speed, like you cannot, like at a certain point, you cannot really protect anything. So
Not
I
true.
just need to do it fast. What you can protect is the market. Look, if you are the first in the market, you always have a huge advantage.
Yeah, that's true. But of course, you got these companies that try to mimic you. Whether they are better or not, that is the other thing. But I still see, for example, if I go into a taxi, I still see people kind of driving around with two or three apps on their dashboard, and they just pick up the business from whatever service, which I think is okay. So is this really what is it meant to be? I understand, of course, there's crazy competition. I recently was in Madrid, and he said there's 15,000 taxi drivers here. That's a lot. And of course, in the home delivery service, and I mean, everybody wants to kind of ensure that during the day they have enough work to make a living.
There's a
So,
lot of consolidation going on right now, a lot
okay.
of acquisition, and I think that's the natural path of things. I don't
Yeah,
think
true.
like we can have like five apps for ride hailing. We're gonna end up with two, maybe. Same for food delivery, and that's why we are seeing these acquisitions like DoorDash acquiring Wolt, DoorDash acquiring Deliveroo, like in Spain, I guess Lyft acquired Freenow or something like that. So I think in the next 5 years we're gonna have like two or three players,
Yeah.
and that's it. And fees gonna go up, discounts gonna go down, and that's what it is. Like I remember in the early days, everything was 50% discount on food delivery, no fees, no anything. I'm still super addicted, and I pay like 3, 4 euros delivery fee, and I still use it. It's on
True.
my routine right now.
Exactly. It is convenience at the end. Yeah, I understand that. So I hear a couple of fascinating stories about scaling, like starting in Portugal, seeing where that your unit economics are good enough to go somewhere else, then taking on Spain. I also realize that every country that you are going into, you start living there. So you actually lived in Madrid, really, and you also told me that you're currently living in London, which is also commitment, focusing on the essence. What is a counterintuitive lesson that you've learned about scaling this business? Something that you didn't
It's fun.
expect, but it still happened.
I think I have a funny one here. I remember like when I went to like this conference, or like listening to a more experienced founder, they always talked about the team. Oh, we need to have the right team. And I was like, no, I need to have orders. I don't have orders. Of course I need the team, of course, like, but yeah, you need to build a team of A players, and they need to be the best ones. Like, really invest a lot of time on hiring. I'm like, guys, I don't even have time. Like, I remember, like, I hired people on the first interview. Like, I remember, I hired a customer support agent for Spain. I was doing customer support in Spain. We already were like the market leaders in Portugal. I had a team of like three people, and two of them quit from one day to the other. So this was like Saturday, and the person that was on customer support was during the week. So I had to do customer support during the week, and then my Spanish is really, really bad. So, and I was like, okay, today I need to end up the day with one customer support agent that can help me, because literally this doesn't work. I can't speak Spanish properly. This is shaming, like it's really bad. But I need to, talk with these customers at the same time. I need to keep the day going. So I was interviewing and doing customer support at the same time. And I remember like this guy jumped on the call, still with us today, a really good performer. And I was like, look, so I think I want to be fully transparent with you. This is a hard job to do, like working on live operations at Oscar, doing customer support. You have a lot of volume. So, and you have sometimes people that you need to solve things on the fly. It's really a lot of stress. So I was like, I want to be 100% transparent with you, and I want you to feel the job, what it is really before starting. So I have a ticket, I have a customer here. I need to call this customer and explain them that we need to reschedule the service for tomorrow. Can you do it live here on the interview? And the guy did it, the guy nailed it, and he started working from that. We did, we never talked, like I remember we talked by the end of the day, and he asked me, like, okay, but what's the salary here? And look, the salary is this, what you think? Is like, oh, it's not that, okay, don't worry, like let's put a little bit more. And he's still with us. So yeah, going back to the story, I was like, maybe I don't feel that hiring the best person or like really investing a lot of time is the most important thing, because I need someone for yesterday, basically. And the business started growing, and I focused so much on scaling everything, supply, growth, product, everything. And one thing that I really forgot was to scale my team. Not the number of people, but the structure of the team. And
Oh.
really having, yeah, and really having like, because I was like, I was still with the mindset that everyone can do everything, right? Like you can do everything. Like, because I learned how to do almost everything at Oscar. So everyone can learn how to do everything, a little bit of everything. And yeah, that's not the case. So at a certain point, you really need to focus on hiring. And it hit me like 6 months ago, maybe only. And okay, I need to find the right person for this. And the right person is not the person that worked in a big company or that have a logo on their CV. It's really about mindset. It's really about things like your personality, things that don't change, because you cannot change people. You don't change people when they have more than 20 years old. Like you can change them. Like you can improve a little bit to the right, a little bit more to the left, but they will not change the way that they are. If they are not obsessed, if they are not ambitious, there will never be, in my opinion, at least. Or at least I don't have the time, to be honest, and I don't have the skills to do that if I want to build something big really fast.
That's true. It is about mindset.
Yeah, so I'm really proud that today we operate with a team that is smaller than what we operate in the past. Not a lot of managers, a lot of people creating value every day, everyone aligned. I work with a very close circle of people that I really trust a lot, and things happen in I would say in a better way. But there's no right way or wrong way. I think there's the way that you are comfortable to operate with, and you just need to be. I think we need to be in an environment that we are comfortable to reach our maximum potential, and
Good point.
yeah, and we have a culture that it's a bit, I would say not very common nowadays, like the hustle culture, the obsession, the ambition, we work long hours and stuff. And if you are not 100% transparent in the job interview, you are just fooling yourself. You can't lie, because it's easier if I, hey, Tom, come and work for Oscar. We have amazing breakfast every day. We have a lot of work-life balance. We have a pool at the office. It's gonna be awesome. Like, no rush. We are big, we are structured. So just come. And then you arrive the first day, and it's just a bunch of savage people inside an office, like working long hours. It's 10 p.m. There's people at the office. Why should I do that? Like, it's lying to people. Yeah, it helped me hire you really fast, and that's cool. But then it's not gonna work, and then I'm gonna have more time like to hire someone for that role. Like that, it's not really the good way, and I don't think it's fair to the people. So be transparent. For
Completely
me, it's
agree.
important. Yeah.
Completely agree. You made a po important point also about it. At some point, you were larger in size, but now you are smaller. But actually, you're growing. You're creating leverage. That's what I hear between the lines. Have you become more focused on creating leverage with the team that you have?
What you mean by leverage? Sorry.
That at the end, it's this metric of ARR per employee or like the revenue per employee. Not only from salespeople at the end, but actually the whole company. And I really like that metric these days because it says a lot about how well you are positioned, how well your solution fits with the market, and how fast you can actually scale up. I mean, you're of course doing it city by city, but there's a lot to say about businesses that need to throw a lot of people at it in order to grow. And a lot of people, other companies, they can grow without adding a lot of people. So how is that balanced for you?
Well, we always need a lot of people, especially like customer support and positions like this. I mean, we are automating some stuff, but it doesn't mean that those people they'll always have a seat at our company. They will just do things in a more automated way, and they need to learn how to use AI for their advantage so they can grow inside the company, because it's hard to grow when you start in a customer support position. Maybe you become a manager, but that's it. Now, if you start automating things, if you start using AI, then you unlock a future that is completely different. But I think for me was the manager mode. That's something that I can't really work with. It's really hard for me to, like, when you don't know how to do something and you hire someone to do it for you. For me, well, I think it works for a lot of people, but for me, it's not really how I like to operate. I can't hire someone to do the best job if I don't know what's there, you know? So when I find a problem in my company and someone has to leave, I always take that role and I deep dive into that. I understand the problem, and then I hire someone to do it in a better way than I would do it. But at least I know the problem.
I
And
like that.
this hurts. You have to have a lot of flexibility. You need to be able to, yeah, there's a problem with customer support, and now I'm doing customer support. Like, it's hard because at the same time you are talking with investors and you are selling that, you know, that your company works without you. Well, the manager mode for me never worked, never made sense. And I think that's why now we have a smaller team that we had a couple of months ago, because there were a lot of managers hiring people like, oh, I don't know how to analyze this metric, so I'm going to hire a business analyst. You know, like, you hire a business analyst when you do so many analyses that you already know how to do them, that you need someone to make your time more efficient, not to do something that you don't know, right?
Exactly.
At least that's the way I see it.
Is it also this whole thing of well, the chapter number four of my book is Remarkable Software Companies Master the Art of Curiosity. And I think that is what is sort of you're implementing between, well, maybe even without realizing it, you know, there's no such thing as we don't know. Yes, we know, and we are going to be curious enough to understand it.
And it's so fun to learn every day, like, new things, and you can get a kick out of really small things. It's so nice. Like, should I put 9.90 or 9.99? Okay, there's a book about this, you know, like there's a week of research about this if you are really curious about this, and I am,
Exactly.
so.
And how do you apply that then to keeping an eye on the market about where your next bets are going to be? I mean, is it only you that is looking for that? Are you encouraging everybody in the company to be curious about these type of things?
Yeah, for sure. Everyone has a voice, and everyone should look into the future, because if you are heads down on the execution, it's really hard to see the path that you have, like, for the future. Moments like fundraising for me, and or board meetings, or doing a deck, I think they are more valuable for me than for the person that I'm actually doing this for, because it's the moment that I can really sit and think about, like, what's going to be the future. It's a moment that I have to breathe and to plan a little bit longer, because every day I'm in trenches, so it's hard to see the long-term vision. But to be honest, at least on my business, I think if we were doing like some AI, rocket science stuff, maybe it shouldn't be like this. But most of the things that we need to do, they are customers tell you. Like, you best way to do anything, like to plan any new feature, is just read tickets from customer support, because call customers, because they tell you. I mean, this is nothing new, but just tell you, like, hey, I want this feature. Okay, 10 people want this feature, 100 people want this feature, 1,000 people want this feature. Okay, let's build this feature, you know, like, they want this. It's more of a matter of prioritizing effort versus impact than really knowing what's there to be done.
Exactly. Well said. I mean, I could go on for hours around this, but I still have one thing that I wanted to leave for the end. And because we talked about it in the beginning, and I saw that you're pretty passionate about it, which is chapter number nine in my book, Sell the Idea and Not the Product. How important at the end is, you know, you're a product company, you created a product, the product enables a service, it makes the life of other people a lot easier. And still, I think it's in the beginning, well, outside of this call, you said the product actually doesn't matter.
I think
Well.
it doesn't matter that much, to be honest. I realized that when we raised those 70K, and I was a software engineer and I wanted to build the perfect product, right? And I started looking at other startups that were at the same position that I was at the time, and I realized that most of them would burn those 70K to build the perfect product. And they actually had an amazing product, And no one was buying that product. And no one was buying that product because they put more effort on the product than on sales. And sales, it's hard. And especially when you are a software engineer and never sold anything, or like you are not a growth focused person. So I just like I remember like I was making this choice of building the perfect product without even actually thinking about this. Like my consciousness was like going to this because it was safest. It was something that I already knew, so it was a little bit easier for me. And I remember I read a book about growth. And I was like, okay, growth is really hard. Like, I know nothing about this. Like, I'm going to put all of my energy into growth. I don't care about the product anymore. It's good. You can call a plumber. You can put like your scheduling, book an appointment, put your credit card. That's it. That's what we need. And let's really push for growth. And I think that was one of the best decisions that I made at the time. And still, like today, I focus a lot more on product, of course, because now, changing things on product when you have a lot of volume, then like if you increase your conversion rate by 1 or 2%, that's a lot of money, right? But when you don't have like a lot of volume, why are you building the perfect product? It's hard because like your friends are using your product, your customers, your family, and they say like, hey, this button is really ugly. Hey, I want to have this feature. Uber has cashback. Yeah, Uber has cashback after they became a unicorn. Like they don't build cashback before, like so all of these options. I know that you guys want to have it. I want to have them as well. But you know, the company will die if I don't show my chart going up and to the right. So
It comes back to this whole thing of focusing on the essence, like first things first, and then over time you'll add all these cool things.
yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing the wisdom. To finish this, based on what you've learned as an entrepreneur over the last 6 years, if I would ask you for a advice on a do and a don't for other tech entrepreneurs out there, what would that be?
The don't, for sure, like, don't just, it's hard to say, but it's like, don't trust 100%, I would say, like, just don't, like, trust people, but be, like, check the metrics, work with them, know what you are doing, like, don't just, like, deliver the keys to your growth department to someone, and then 2 years after that person left, and you look at the numbers, you look at the way that things are being built, and you get surprised, and it's, maybe it's too late then to turn things around. I consider myself, to be honest, like a humble person. So you try not like, oh, why should I, this guy is an expert on growth. Why should I like be involved in this? This person knows way better than me. I should just give freedom and trust everything. They will do an amazing job. You get surprised, like, how can you learn fast and sometimes be better, or at least like have an open discussion, because I think everyone can work better as a team. So just for that, you shouldn't like just handle something really, really important to someone. It should be involved, and it's hard. It takes a lot of work. And the do is, I would say, the do is really the obsession and the hard work and the hustle mentality. For me, like, I think if you are planning to create a startup because you don't like to have a boss or you have a cool idea, I'm glad that I didn't thought about all of this before, because if I knew what I knew today, probably I would have started this. Like it's really fun, it's really cool, but it's a lot of work. It's like 12, 14 hours a day, no weekends. Like it's hard. It impacts your family, your relationship, your friends. Like it's hard. So if you do it also for the right way, for the value, not for the money. The money will come. If you create value, the money will come, the success will come, or don't, or not. Like you should expect that. Like, yeah, we just want to build cool stuff, I think. Like, and we want to run one day maybe to have an exit for what? To get money to invest in to build the next big thing. And that's how we do it, right? That's what we so the story is never like the good things that you see. It's really the it's create the value to see. Like I'm very proud that in Portugal, everyone, almost everyone knows Oscar. Like we changed the way of people hire these services. We saved so much time for people that so they can really focus on their work, on their craft. Like if you are a lawyer, you shouldn't be cleaning your house. Like it doesn't make sense because I pay lawyers and I know how much they cost by the hour. So don't clean your house because it's you are losing money every day. Like just call an Oscar. Like
I like how you phrase it, call an Oscar. And it has, of course, got a connotation with it as well. But I completely agree with you. I always applaud for those companies that measure their success by the impact they help their customers create. And this is a great example of that. So where can people go to find out more about Oscar or to say hi to you?
Yeah, on LinkedIn I'm always available. I really like to discuss things and then to be in touch with everyone as much as possible. And yeah, Oscar, we are on the App Store, so you just search on the App Store Oscar, or we have a website oscar-app.com. And yeah, hopefully we'll be present in more countries in the coming months, years. That's our mission. So yeah.
Coming to a place near you soon. So, guys,
Yeah,
thank you
cool.
very much. It was a pleasure to talk to you and learn about your experiences.
Thank you, Don. Amazing questions. Thank you so much. Really nice.
And this wraps up my conversation with João Marques, CEO of Oscar. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.